Rhetorical Roots and Media Future, How Podcasting Fits into the Computers and Writing Classroom. This is Rhetorical Roots and Media Future, How Podcasting Fits into the Computers and Writing Classroom, by me.
I am Dr. Jennifer L. Bowie, your host for this series and a senior usability research analyst for the Home Depot website. I'm also a podcaster with a variety of podcasts, including Screen Space, a podcast about creating usable, accessible, effective, and efficient web, blog, and digital media design for the everyday and non-expert designer. You are listening to the full series, all 7 episodes in one sound file. I have put the episodes together in one text. This is for those who want to hear the whole thing in one sitting. If you want to listen to this episode by episode, or not in one sitting, I suggest you listen to each episode, which you can find at kairos.technorhetoric.net/16.2/topoi/bowie.
With an estimated 30.8 million United States listeners in 2009, podcasting is no longer an emerging technology. However, podcasting has not yet been incorporated into many writing or even computers and writing classrooms. This may be because, despite the popularity, podcasting is still a young media. But the newness of media rarely stops those in computers and writing. Perhaps podcasting has not yet reached the popularity level in writing classrooms because podcasting does not fall into the category of writing as many see it. But podcasting has much in common with other genres and media in computers and writing. The focus in both areas, podcasting and computers and writing, on audience, content, purpose, tone, text production, style, and effective communication not only means that the goals are similar, but also that podcasting is a medium that may help us teach these concepts to our students. Podcasting brings us back to our rhetorical roots of spoken argument and texts. Delivery becomes an important canon again, and the remaining 4 canons may be applied in ways both common to ancient rhetoric and modern multimedia. In this podcast article, I respond to Barbara Warnick's call on page 327 of Looking into the Future for, quote, a move away from print-centric criticism, unquote. I examine podcasting as a possible component of the computers and writing classroom. I start with a brief discussion of what podcasting is and provide explanations for other terms I use. If you are familiar with podcasting, you may want to skip my general podcasting discussion. If so, go to approximately time 6:06 in the podcast, or keep listening to see how I define podcasts. After the definitions, I provide a short review of the limited empirical research on podcasting in classrooms and draw on some more general scholarship on digital media. Next, I address how podcasting may be used in classrooms to help students rethink the old writing concepts we have been teaching, such as the 5 canons in audience, tone, purpose, and context, in new ways, and also consider how students may bring the lessons they learned from podcasting back to their print text writing. I draw on student work for examples of how students are learning through podcasting. In the transcript of this podcast, I provide a full works cited and list of relevant links. Podcasting 101 and definitions. Podcasting is a somewhat controversial term. The term podcasting was created in 2004, slightly after Adam Curry's iPodder software was first available to download and transfer podcasting files, according to Rob Welch and Moore Lafferty. The term is generally considered to be a portmanteau of iPod and broadcast. However, Danny Gregory, the first person to use the term, according to Morris and Tiva, did not have the iPod in mind when considering the term. It has since been backronymed as personal on-demand broadcasting, or better yet, according to Morris and Tiva, personal on-demand narrowcasting. Narrowcasting is a more accurate term as it refers to distributing content to a select, narrow audience, whereas broadcasting refers to delivering content to a wide audience, such as everyone who receives the TV or radio signal. Of course, what the term represents does not alone define it. Podcasts are episodic digital media files distributed over the internet. They are downloaded through web syndication, often RSS feeds or podcatcher software like iTunes. Normally, the files are assumed to be audio or video files, and many people think this is all a podcast is. While podcasts are generally audio or video files, they can be any type of file: PDFs, doc files, PowerPoints, rich text files, and more. These files are different than webcasts or audio or video posted online in that they are normally distributed file-based downloads and not streaming files accessed through a site such as YouTube or a blog. While closely related, podcasts are different from blogs and other digital media that can be subscribed to with RSS. Podcasts are designed to be delivered when published to the subscriber's computer, MP3 player, phone, or other device, whereas most blogs and other digital media are designed to be accessed through their site. Podcasts that have been delivered to a computer, MP3 player, phone, or other device can then be listened to or watched anytime and anywhere without internet access. However, blogs and other digital media a user subscribes to often cannot be accessed without an internet connection. Although the differences are blurring as media technologies advance and as many podcasts have corresponding blog sites, the two key differences of delivery and anytime, anywhere access still make the podcast distinct. Perhaps the most interesting aspect of podcasts, especially from an educational standpoint, is the time and location-shifted aspects of the texts. People may listen anytime, anywhere. They are not chained to a specific time or place. Since many podcasts may be listened to on an MP3 player or cell phone, there are increased opportunities to listen anywhere. Suddenly, students may access their texts while driving, running, doing chores, and so on, which increases the opportunities for learning. This is a key, especially for non-traditional students who may have additional time constraints. In this article, I focus on audio podcasts and sometimes video podcasts. I'm examining these two types of podcasts because they are the most common. They are also more distinct from other digital media than a podcast of a Word document or rich text file is, which are too similar to the paper texts our students create. In addition, audio and video podcasts are more closely related to each other and to the ancient rhetorical speeches, since the text is, at least in part, spoken. Plus, it is easier to focus on these two rather than the entire range of distributed media. Discussion of all possible file types is beyond the scope of this article and outside the scope of my experience with podcasts. From this point forward, whenever I say podcast, I mean video and audio podcasts specifically. In this text, I discuss two main types of classroom podcasts: teacher-produced podcasts and student-produced podcasts. While the terms are fairly self-explanatory, there are a few concepts necessary to explore. In both cases, these podcasts are created for or as part of the class. Teacher-produced podcasts are obviously created by the teacher, possibly in association with others, and are for the students. These may be recordings of the lectures, supplemental material, readings in podcast form composed by the teacher, and other various podcast texts the teacher created for the students. In the still limited scholarship on podcasts and education, generally, podcasts are of this type, teacher-produced, and are often recorded lectures. Student-produced podcasts are, not surprisingly, produced by the students and are often course requirements in some ways. These podcasts may be composed by a group of students or a single student, and may be informal and barely edited, like a journal entry or daily reading response, or very formal, polished texts, like the final written course paper. I focus on this type of podcast in the article, as it is through composing text, whether written, podcast, or in some other form, that our students learn the most. In addition, there is very little scholarship on student-produced podcasts. Another type of podcast is externally produced podcasts, which are not created for the class, but by outsiders not associated with the class and for other reasons. These podcasts may be required or recommended text for the class. One example may be the very popular Grammar Girl podcast, which I require a subscription to in several of my undergraduate courses. These are often good texts in that they are free and that the student may access them anytime, anywhere, with MP3 players and other devices. Also, these work well as examples of various rhetorical concepts like style and arrangement. While these may be strong additions to a writing class, my focus in this article is on student-produced podcasts. I discuss these three types and divide one of those categories into two various types in more detail in the companion piece to this text, Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering Issues and Possibilities. As Shanker states on page 375 of Speaking on Record, quote, words such as writing, speaking, and talking are complex and polysemous, leaving no clear way to describe related but new activities, end quote. This issue is one I found problematic when discussing podcasts as texts. I found it hard to differentiate between these oral texts and the more traditionally visually accessed texts, such as print texts, websites, blogs, wikis, and so on. While these more traditional texts are primarily visually accessed, they should not be lightly combined with other types of visually accessed texts, including paintings, photographs, and icons, texts that may not use words primarily or at all to communicate. What is important in these traditionally visually accessed texts and podcast texts is generally the primary form of communication is words. So I needed a term to differentiate the traditional visually accessed text from both the oral texts of podcasts and the visual and non-word-based texts of images. Thus, I focused on a key element in these more traditional texts, typography, and developed the term typographic-based texts to represent print texts, blogs, websites, wikis, and other visually accessed texts that use words as the primary means of communication. This ends my definitions of podcasting, classroom podcast types, and typographic-based text. Next, I will explain the literature on podcasting in education. Review of the literature on podcasting in the writing classroom. Since podcasting is so young, only about 5 years old, it is not surprising there is limited scholarship on the subject, and even less on podcasting in education, let alone in writing classrooms. But the research that does exist provides rationale for the adoption of podcasts in the writing classroom. Various scholars have found several benefits to podcasting, which can be combined into 5 categories. Category 1, higher achievements. In 2 different studies on the use of podcasts of class lectures, researchers found that podcasts resulted in higher student achievements. Belinda Tyann and Stephen Colbrand, on pages 831 to 832, discovered reduced attrition and a, quote, higher standard of answers and examinations, unquote, with the use of podcasts. Danny McKinney, Jennifer Dyke, and Elise Lubber found that students who studied with podcasts and related PowerPoint handouts had higher exam scores than students who only attended a lecture with PowerPoint slides. Category 2, student support and enthusiasm. 3 different studies on teacher-produced podcasts found high levels of student support and enthusiasm for podcasts. McKinney, Dyke, and Lubber, on page 621, determined that 88% of students prefer a podcast of a missed lecture over lecture notes. Similarly, Evan noted that students are more receptive to learning from podcasts than from lectures or textbooks. And a third study, Michael Huntsberger and Alan Stavinsky, provided optional and supplemental podcasts of reading overviews for the students, and learned that students enthusiastically appreciated these podcasts, with 89% of students listening to the podcasts. In fact, 35% of students listened more than once, which is impressive for optional class material. Category 3, time and location shifted. The time and location shifted option for podcasts is a benefit that researchers in 2 different studies highlighted. According to Evans, nearly 80% of the students rated the anytime, anywhere ability as important, and 25% of the students took advantage of this and listened to their class podcasts while traveling. Huntsberger and Stavinsky, on page 403, found similar numbers of students taking advantage of this ability. About 30% listened during, quote, unspecified activities, end quote. And students were also excited that they could listen to the podcasts at their own convenience. Category 4, student opinions. In 2 studies, students expressed positive opinions on the benefits of podcasts. According to Tyann and Colbrand, students think podcasts are valuable to their studies, assist learning, aid exam preparation, and provide flexibility. Evan states on 496 that students think podcasts enhance their learning experience and are more effective revision tools than textbooks or student notes. And finally, Category 5, community building and classroom experience. The use of podcasts may also enrich community building and classroom experience, according to 2 studies. Students in Krause's online class thought that the podcast-like audio files provided them a classroom-like experience, which was helpful. Tyann and Colbrand discovered increased community building in the classes with lecture-based podcasts. Each of these studies I just discussed analyzed audio podcasts. Of course, there are also issues with including these podcasts. While the time and location shifted option is a benefit, it is not always used. Evans found that 80% of the students he studied listened on their computer and only 20% on MP3 players. So mobility was not fully utilized by the students. But this does not mean it is not a benefit for those 20% of students who listen anywhere. In Tyann and Colbrand's study on page 831, students pointed out several other problems, including implementation costs, lack of visuals, delays in the availability of the lectures, additional time needed to listen, reduction in lecture attendance, and, quote, not being able to ask questions, unquote. Not being able to ask questions points to a serious concern related to podcasts, especially lecture-style podcasts. This lack of interaction could be a significant determinant to many students, especially those struggling with the material. While other forms of interaction may be possible, such as emails, discussion forums, and even future classes, the lack of an instantaneous answer is problematic. Also, the podcasters do not get the immediate feedback from the audience, their students, and cannot adjust the material to fit the audience, their students' immediate needs. So while many advantages exist, there are also disadvantages to consider, especially with these lecture-style podcasts. The majority of these studies occurred outside computer and writing classes, or even rhetoric, composition, and technical communication classes. Stephen D. Krause conducted one of the few audio podcast research studies in computers and writing. In a small study of his online class, which 11 of his 19 students participated in, he provided supplemental audio files similar to podcasts. He found students thought the files aided in the study of material, but that some students had issues with the extra time the podcast took, or because they were not audio-based learners. Krause also found that of the 11 students, 3 did not listen to the supplemental material, 4 listened to some, and the other 4 listened to half or more. This matches the research by McKinney, Dyke, and Lubber, and also Huntsberger and Stravinsky. Students will listen to podcast supplemental material. While none of these studies examined other types of supplemental material, it would be interesting to see if students are more or less likely to access supplemental material in podcast or audio form. From these studies, it appears that podcasts in the classroom may lead to higher scores, higher levels of student interest in the material, and repeated listening to the podcasts, and a more classroom-like experience for online classes. In addition, students find that the podcasts are valuable to their studies, assist learning, and provide flexibility. However, drawing on these studies, issues like increased time requirements, implementation costs, and lack of visuals should be considered with podcasts in the classroom. Although these studies are helpful to those considering incorporating podcasting into their classes, the researchers focus on teacher-produced podcasts that are generally recorded lectures. While it is important to understand how effective and helpful teacher-produced podcasts are, these are not the only types of podcasts computers and writing teachers should consider for their classes. We teach our students how to compose in various media and genres, so we should consider the fit of student-produced podcasts in our classrooms. In the rest of this article, I present how podcasting, especially student-produced podcasts, may help our students rethink established rhetorical and writing concepts, such as the 5 canons, and apply them in new ways. I also discuss how rethinking and new applications may often lead to increased traditional print and digital media writing skills. Rethinking the old in new ways. Lemke suggests on page 76 that, quote, new information technologies, new communication practices, and new social networks make possible new paradigms for education and learning and call into question the assumptions on which the old paradigms rest, unquote. Podcasts are calling into question some of the teaching methods and media we use.
As more texts become digital texts, from those written on the computer and printed to those created solely for reading or access online, the need to teach our students methods and skills to write these texts becomes even more vital. Lunsford, among others, has contended on page 170 that we are in secondary literacy, which is a, quote, literacy that is both highly inflected by oral forms, structures, and rhythms, and highly aware of itself as writing, understood as variously organized and mediated systems of signification, unquote. Thus, writing has become more oral. Conversely, with digital media, oral text may become writing, with, as Shanker suggests on page 375, the, quote, essential properties of writing, such as the permanence of record, possibilities of editing, indexing, and scanning. With this expansion of what we consider writing, comes the need to teach students how to write in these new forms. In addition, Lunsford asserts on page 170 that, quote, in secondary literacy, student writers must be able to think critically and carefully about how to deliver the knowledge they produce, end quote. Warnick agrees, arguing on page 332 that, quote, there will be an increased need in the near future for the work of critics with an understanding of what's under the hood, as electronic texts in time become more complex and immersive, end quote. Integrating podcasting into our classrooms is one such way our students may examine and explore, quote, what is under the hood, end quote. Warnick argues that online discourse, quote, works through strategic use of argument forms, common topics, conventional genres, stylized expression, and other structures suitable for rhetorical criticism and analysis, unquote. Podcasting, one form of online discourse, certainly incorporates all of these. In fact, podcasting, when done well, should heavily draw on ideas from our ancient rhetorical roots, especially in ways typographic-based media cannot. Podcasting provides a medium through which we and our students may rethink these rhetorical roots in new ways. In this section, I first briefly discuss how I have used podcasts in my class. Then I explore how the rhetorical canon may be reconsidered and reapplied in podcast texts. Next, I discuss the basic writing concepts of audience, purpose, context, and tone, and how students who podcast tend to develop deeper, richer, and more thorough application of these concepts. I include a discussion of how, in my classes, I have found that students are rethinking these concepts and coming to a deeper understanding, and they are applying these increased skills to other forms of writing. I have taught podcasting since the fall of 2007. I have included podcasts as an optional or required project in 8 classes, 5 graduate and 3 undergraduate classes, requiring podcasts in 3 of the graduate classes and 2 of the undergraduate. Podcast projects include the Week in Review assignment, where students presented a review of the week of the class from discussions to readings and lectures. Another assignment is the Reading Response podcast that asks students to podcast their reactions and thoughts on the readings. While never required, some students opted to do their final class projects in podcast form, which ranged from longer audio arguments to a podcast series on rhetoric to a case study with interviews. In the companion piece to this text, I discuss some of these assignments. I focus this article mainly on my undergraduate classes, and especially a senior seminar class with a social media theme that had a larger podcasting component. However, I include examples from a variety of classes. While some of these podcasts are available online, I did secure the students' permission to use their podcasts and other intellectual property in this text. The 5 canons. The first of the 5 canons, invention, is possibly the least changed in podcasting from the older traditional methods. According to Aristotle, invention is, quote, discovering the best available means of persuasion, unquote. Invention deals with the what to say, not the how to say it. The what may vary due to media, but not as much as the how. The question of topoi or commonplaces comes into play with invention. Of the common topics, testimony may work particularly well with podcasting, as the podcast may literally include others' testimony by recording and then integrating them into the podcast. The testimony is even more meaningful in the voice of the person giving the testimony. This adds both ethos and pathos to the testimony and thus to the text. In previous media, especially print texts and speeches, the testimony would only be quotes, which are helpful but not as persuasive as the actual voice or image of the speaker giving the testimony.
Likewise, including the spoken words of witnesses or authorities will make the argument stronger and more reliable and trustworthy. Maxims or proverbs may be included, either spoken by the podcaster or incorporated from sites like LibriVox, which provides free public domain text recorded by volunteers. Incorporating maxims or proverbs from LibriVox and another voice may provide additional ethos and impacts later canons like delivery. In addition, resources like LibriVox may provide maxims and proverbs the modern-day student may not know about, thus expanding their possibilities. So while the what of invention may not change much for podcasting, the additional variety of the what may be offered through the inclusion of real voices of the witnesses and authorities and by other voices delivering the proverbs and maxims. While this incorporates more of the how into invention, it also encourages students to think about the what in new ways. One of the bigger changes from print papers, most typographic-based texts, and even ancient rhetorical speeches, is that podcasters may include music in their recordings. While music plays into arrangement, style, and delivery, the inclusion of music begins with invention. The student composer must decide if music fits into the what of her argument. If she thinks the music will help with the persuasiveness of her message, then she will later consider the style of music that works best, the arrangement of the music, perhaps an introduction, bed music in the background, while speaking, transitions, and finally the delivery of the music. The possibilities of music add to the list of tools the podcaster may use when deciding what to say. In my own classes, students have included interviews, quotes by famous people, proverbs, music, and maxims. These what's of the argument were often wise rhetorical decisions, many of which are much less common and even impossible in other media students used for projects. Many of my students took the opportunity to think beyond the standards of the typographic-based text they were used to composing and were inventive with the what of their podcast arguments. Here's one example of a student, Brett Jones, drawing on a maxim from LibriVox.
So with that being said, let's take a quick look at a fable. It is just a really quick fable about the sun and some frogs who had an objection to what the sun had intended to do. So have a listen, and we'll get straight back to the discussion afterwards.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. The Frog's Complaint Against the Sun, an Aesop's Fable. Once upon a time, the sun was about to take himself a wife. The frogs in terror all raised their voices to the skies, and Jupiter, disturbed by the noise, asked them what they were croaking about.
Arrangement is the second canon to consider and reconsider with podcasting. Arrangement, the order of discourse, is impacted by the media of podcasting, as media and genre generally impact each other. The first thing to consider is whether podcasting is a genre and if there are subgenres. Since podcasting is so young, this may be hard to fully determine, but this is a good issue to bring up in class with students. Class discussions on podcasting as a genre often seem clearer to students than the analysis of print genres. Many podcasts are quite different from other audio texts, such as radio shows, and certainly different from text and non-audio forms, such as blog posts, memos, emails, and so on. In addition, there are a variety of podcast and podcast types that may lead to some interesting discussions as to what counts as genre, media, and category. Walsh and Lafferty list 18 podcast genres, with the last genre, other genres. These 18 include educational, gaming, music, news, politics, couple casts, comedy, religion and spiritual, called God casts, and interviews. While many of these have genre-specific aspects, such as content arrangement and other features that allow them to be categorized, many podcasts integrate components that may be found in a variety of these podcast genres. In addition, listening to an assortment of podcasts, especially from a variety of categories, students may analyze an array of arrangement methods. They may consider the commonalities of arrangement in their chosen categories, but also consider what works well in other categories and why these differences exist. For example, should they include a pre-intro, which is episode-specific information such as date, an episode title to let the listener know which episode she's listening to before she invests more time in the episode, and in case she does not have access to a screen to see this information, or maybe an intro, which is an approximately 45-second introduction to get the listeners hooked and introduce the topic, or an outro, the closing information, which includes email addresses, website URLs, Creative Commons license information, closing saying, source and transcript information, and so on. Students who consider and reconsider the canon of arrangement in writing podcasts have some of the same arrangement issues as a typical text, such as which point to put first, second, third, and the genre conventions. But podcasting offers other arrangement considerations. Deciding whether to include music may be more of an invention area, but where to include it is an arrangement concern. Should they start with music, have musical transitions, end with music, put music after the title segment? These additional arrangement considerations seem to also make the students more aware of traditional arrangement considerations and often results in a more thoughtful arrangement of their podcast texts. In addition, students seem to take this awareness and deeper consideration of arrangement to texts and other media, resulting in improved arrangement skills. While students may easily relate the third canon, style, and podcasting back to rhetoric's roots, style is one of the more difficult concepts for many of my students to grasp with written texts. Style has, at times during the history of rhetoric, only been considered simple ornamentation, and many students see it this way and not as the deeper artful expression of ideas appropriate to one's purpose. Many of my students attempt writing in an academic style, with big words sometimes selected through Microsoft's Word's thesaurus, long sentences, and passive voice, which results in something that is not fun to write, read, or grade. However, the questions of how it will be said becomes quite literal when the students are speaking their text. Suddenly, the spoken text issues of style, such as dictation, accents, jargon, word choices, expression, and speed, come into play. As both pathos and ethos are key when considering style, students begin to think about how an accent may give them pathos but decrease ethos, or vice versa, or even increase or decrease both. They consider how jargon may give them ethos with some audiences and decrease it with others, as their audience is no longer just the instructor, and possibly because they hear how ridiculous their academic written style sounds when spoken, students reconsider style in new and often interesting ways. While this is usually done more subtly, I've had two obvious examples of style choices among my student podcasts. Both my examples involve the artful use of accents. The first is a more serious use. A graduate student created a podcast critiquing web design of St. Martin websites. As a native of St. Martin, the Dutch southern half of the island of St. Martin, she used her native dialect for the podcast, which is quite different than the normal American dialect she used in class. This use of her native dialect and accent gives her additional ethos, especially with her St. Martin audience. Here's a short example of her podcast.
Welcome to St. Martin. Access denied. A view and critique of St. Martin's web design. You are with Makisha Hines. I am a graduate student at Georgia State University. I am currently pursuing a master's degree in English with a concentration in advanced composition and rhetoric. There will be three parts to this podcast. Today is June 2nd, 2009. This is episode 1 of 3.
My second example is two undergraduates in a senior seminar. For this class, pairs of students were given 1 week during the semester and had to create a week in review podcast covering their week. Their audience was mainly the class, but they knew these podcasts would be posted on iTunes University afterwards. The Style 1 pair, Brent Jones and Arch Woodard, applied to their week in review as pirate. They spoke like pirates, renamed everyone in the class with pirate names, and gave us positions on the good ship Kairos, and made several pirate references while discussing what we covered that week, which was arrangement and style. They certainly applied a style that was not traditionally academic, yet they successfully met the assignment goals and created what was probably the favorite week in review podcast among their classmates. It was certainly one of the most memorable. This is a short example of their podcast and how they integrated pirate with rhetoric.
Ahoy, ye scurvy mates. Today's Wednesday, October 15th. Welcome to Podcast at Sea. This is Archie Woods, first mate of the Kairos, 4320, an international seafaring vessel capable of navigating to not just any place, but any time on the globe in a matter of 1 hour and 15 minutes. This ship, captained by Dr. Jabo, has a crew near a dozen. Throughout our week at sea, we ponder and discuss the meaning of being rhetorical citizens.
Oi, what are you dragging on about, A.W.? Stop your rambling before your listeners walk right off the plank.
What? What are you doing here, Deckhand? Can't you read the sign? No disturbing the first mate while in the recording studio.
With both these examples, their strong style choices would not have been clear or perhaps not even noticeable in a typographic-based text. Because they were podcasting, they could play with diction and accents in ways writing print text does not allow. In both cases, they made complex style decisions for their purpose and strengthened their arguments because of this. Both podcasts would have been fine without the accents and dialect, but these reinforce the text immensely and connect to the audience through ethos and pathos. By making extreme style choices in these texts, these three students opened up their style choices in their writing. By allowing and encouraging different, even radically different styles, we may allow our students to play with and, not coincidentally, learn about style in ways the written academic argument does not easily allow. In both my examples, I did nothing to encourage these radical styles, and only in the undergraduate class did we specifically discuss style. These styles came about through the students' own rhetorical decision-making process. I plan to use them as examples in future classes to see how other students consider and reconsider style after listening to some of the effective options used previously. Memory is one of the canons that has been often forgotten, ignored, or de-emphasized with print rhetoric. In composing print arguments, the rhetorician has less of a need for memory to deliver the argument or to develop improvisational skills and a treasury of hoi to pull from improvisational circumstances. These skills are important for speeches and spoken improvisational arguments, but composition and rhetoric has pulled away from these types of arguments with the typographically based arguments. With the focus on typographically based arguments, memory was considered the recall of topoi, drawing on kairos and grounded in audience and circumstances. Regardless, memory was clearly defined and developed for spoken arguments. As podcasting brings back the spoken aspects of argument, memory once again applies, and in more of the classical ways. The type of podcast most clearly related to the ancient spoken arguments is the unscripted podcast. For these podcasts, the rhetorician may draw on the same memory aids to recall a memorized speech, or, if the podcast is not memorized, may need to draw on the improvisational skills and the topoi treasury. A scripted podcast may still delve more into memory than we see with print arguments. Even when scripted, the podcaster may go off script as something new may occur to her, possibly from some kairotic consideration or topoi she did not consider when scripting. As a podcaster, I know I do this at times. Even when composing a script, the podcaster may find considerations of kairos, audience, and circumstances more obvious and applicable. As podcasts have a shorter production process than many print texts, in part because they do not need to go through gatekeepers, kairotic choices may not only make more sense, but may be necessary to keep the podcast up to date. The students in my senior seminar class were more likely to mention current events, including the presidential election that occurred that semester, in their podcast than in other writing they composed that semester, except possibly their twice-weekly reading responses. They could draw on the debates, speeches, and other current and often political events for examples to not only give their arguments ethos, but also to connect to their audience, who they knew was watching and listening to the same events. Most of my student podcasters created scripted podcasts, which drew on their topoi treasury and the occasional improvisation, but did not require memorization or large amounts of improvisation. However, in my senior seminar class, they had three podcast reading responses, which were more casual and often off the cuff, as part of their twice-a-week reading response requirement. For these responses, students often pulled from their topoi treasury using comparisons, relationships, circumstances, and testimony. Interestingly, there was less of these topoi in their print reading responses. Through the use of podcasting, both scripted and unscripted, but especially unscripted, students may work with the canon of memory in more classical and often richer methods than with the print argument. In my classes, students seem to value this canon, or at least understand it in more complex ways after and while podcasting. The final canon, delivery, applies to podcasting in both traditional and new ways. Delivery is, of course, how something is said. The public publication and presentation of discourse, including the production of the argument with effective gestures, tone, words, movements, and images. Obviously, the performance aspects of delivery, such as gestures, voice modulation, and articulation, are not easily applied to print text, and thus some aspects of delivery have been omitted or only briefly covered in print-based rhetorical texts and training. However, podcasting brings back some of these aspects. In audio podcasts, many of the techniques of vocal delivery are again applicable. Voice modulation, sound levels, and articulation are important considerations in audio podcasting. In video podcasting, these aspects of delivery are also important, along with gestures, of course. However, these classical oral delivery methods are not the only delivery methods applicable to podcasting. The delivery methods developed for print, web, and other typographic-based texts may also be appropriate in audio or video podcasting. Delivery of typographic-based text includes the look of the text, paper choices, background colors, typography choices, and visual to all impact the look and feel of a typographic-based text. As many podcasters have scripts, show notes, and other typographic-based texts associated with the episodes, the authors of these texts should draw on the same design and visual presentation methods developed for other typographic-based texts. In addition, many podcasts have websites and associated digital places for the podcast, which should also draw on the design and delivery considerations developed for digital, visually accessed texts. So the effective delivery of an audio or video podcast should consider the classical rhetorical speech methods, along with typographic-based text methods. A good podcast should be delivered in a way that draws on and remediates the delivery of various media before it. But podcasting also brings with it additional considerations for delivery. The visuals of a typographic-based text may show up in additional places, with the transcripts or websites, but also be part of the podcast file, which includes album art and visuals within more advanced podcasts. Slides or pictures that change at particular intervals during the podcast is an example. As one student, Ryan Rice, put it, quote, "Compared to other types of electronic writing and publishing, I think podcasts actually allow the creator to do more in terms of presentation," unquote. Editing is another delivery-related concern. With typographic-based text, editing is important. However, editing for a podcast is a bit different. Sound editing, for example, includes editing out verbal tics, adding or removing pauses and silences, making words louder or quieter, fixing poorly pronounced words, editing for time and size, and more. Sometimes the edits may change poorly delivered aspects such as articulation and voice modulation, thus improving the final delivery of the text, in ways not possible with the classic rhetorical speeches. In my own classes and personally, I found that podcasters tend to understand their speaking quirks after an edit or two of their own recorded voice. In some cases, podcasters may become better speakers as they work to remove issues they spend a lot of time editing out of their podcasts. I'm much more aware of my verbal tic, and have begun working on my speaking to remove this. I use my ums as an example in class and have had several students come to me with similar examples they find in their own speaking, including ahs and likes and other issues such as speaking speeds. Thus, it seems podcast editing may lead to better delivered podcasts and enable podcasters to understand their own speaking issues and work to improve them, thus leading to better spoken texts overall. One final area of delivery consideration podcasts have that are not normally part of typographic-based texts or speeches is music. The classical rhetoricians, for example, did not have or use music to set the tone, at least not that I know of. Music also draws on invention, arrangement, and style consideration, and certainly adds to the final delivered product and overall performance of the podcast. Music may be used to connect episodes of a podcast with a theme song, for transitions within the text, as I do here, as examples to set tone, as background to add layers and auditory interest, and for other delivery-based considerations.
My students have used music in a variety of interesting ways to improve delivery. One student used music from a friend's band to link his three reading response podcasts together, creating interesting consistency more common among professional podcasts while providing free advertising for a friend. Several students use music for transitions between parts of their podcasts. The students who produced the previously mentioned pirate podcasting included beatboxing, a form of verbal percussion, which did not fit the pirate theme, but was used to wrap up the podcast and draw student interest. One student, Ashley Judge, created a series of podcasts called Red Arena, and she used music in ways that greatly increased the effectiveness of the performance of her podcast. She was a ballerina with a local company, and her series was about rhetoric in a grammar girl style. The beginning of each podcast had a different musical composition related to ballet, which built ethos for the name of her podcast, provided an ear-catching opening to her podcast, and set the tone for each piece. Here are some examples of students using music, including a small bit of music in the Red Arena podcast. These illustrate how the tone is set and how the ethos and pathos may be impacted.
Remember, guys, rhetoric is nothing but reason well-dressed and argument put in order. Thank you all.
It's Ashley Judge, and this is my November 10th Week in Review podcast.
Welcome back to Robert Manfredi's podcast show for Rhetoric and Composition, Senior Seminar Fall of 2008.
Welcome to the Red Arena Podcast, rhetorical tips to keep you on your toes.
My students who podcast tended to consider and reconsider the five rhetorical canons in both ancient and new ways. Delivery style and memory in podcasts have strong similarities to delivery style and memory of the ancient Greek rhetoricians, as they both are spoken forms. Thus, many of the key points Aristotle and others made about spoken rhetoric may be applied by students to their podcasts, permitting a more thorough understanding of these three canons than the students had when applying these canons to print texts. In addition, each of the canons may be applied new ways, drawing on the benefits of the media, such as the inclusion of music and new ways of delivery. Invention and arrangement may also be applied in both new and ancient ways, from the use of testimony in the voice of the speaker and the arrangement of various genres of podcasts. Students seem to better grasp and understand the five canons when they applied them to podcasting. They used creative methods to make their podcasts richer and more effective rhetorical texts. But my students did not stop with their podcast. They tended to later apply their deeper understanding of the canons to other texts, from more traditional print texts to websites, blogs, and other digital media, and to speeches and oral presentations. Other writing skills: audience, purpose, context, and tone. Beyond the five canons of rhetoric, I have found incorporating podcasting, especially student-produced podcasts, into the writing classroom leads to increased writing skills in other key areas: audience, purpose, context, and tone. In traditional academic writing, many students seem to struggle with the concept of audience. They often write for their real audience, the teacher, but have trouble envisioning and writing for other audiences. However, I have found with podcasting, students consider their audience in ways that are both richer and deeper than what I tend to see in typographic-based texts. As with the other digital media, like blogs and websites, students have a real audience. They post it online, and other people might actually read it or listen to it. Podcasting seems to lead to further attention to audience because of this. For many students, it seems that their voice makes it more personal and increases their investment. Since these are their words from their mouths, the students appear to care more about how they sound to their audience. I have had students speak in slang during a presentation to their peers, but work to remove slang from their podcasts with the same audiences. Perhaps because of the increased personal nature of the text for students, they tend to better visualize and consider their audience. Audience analyses I have received for podcast assignments tend to be much more developed than for print texts. Interestingly, they then apply this depth of analysis to their writing in other media. Their audience analysis of texts written after their podcasts are richer, deeper, and more thorough. Students who create podcasts also seem to be more aware of their purpose. For some of them, the purpose moves beyond just another paper I have to write. One student, Robert Manfredi, stated this nicely in a reflection, quote, "I tried to imagine while writing that I was talking to someone and not writing a paper that may increase my own stature in the eyes of my teacher," end quote. This same student saw the podcast as having a broader audience beyond the teacher, and because of this states the, quote, "purpose changes because of this change in audience," unquote. The students also found that they may portray their purpose, among other things, in more ways. For example, one student, Angela Johnson, stated, quote, "The podcast is stronger because I get to use more than just words. I have tone, inflection, delivery, and sound," end quote. In addition, music, word choice, speed, pauses, and more may be used to better match their purposes with tone and other aspects of writing. Like the richer audience analysis students developed for their first podcast and then later writing, the richer purpose they considered for their podcast was then applied to later work, podcasts, or other writing. Thus, in both cases, it seems that once students began applying these concepts more deeply in one medium, they brought these new skills and considerations to their future writing, regardless of media. My podcasting students became stronger writers in print and other media because of what they learned while podcasting. The next writing skill, context, is often one I find students spend little time on. This makes sense. Often the context of the true reader of their work, me, their teacher, is not going to greatly impact their text. Most likely, I will be reading it at a desk or similar location with decent lighting and relatively minimal distractions. Students also have a good grasp of my context as reader, at least from the general personality and interests, and occasionally my pet peeves. While my technical communication students who create manuals may play a bit more with context, often there are not enough differences in context from most of their other school writing for students to need to make many, if any, alterations. This changes significantly with podcasting. While my students may know where I listen to podcasts, the variety of contexts, driving, exercising, doing chores, or sitting at my computer, complicates their understanding of my context. We also discuss where they and their audiences may listen to podcasts, the physical context of their audiences, time, location, environment, distractions, may vary tremendously, and students grasp this concept quickly and easily. In fact, in some cases, as this student, Tiana Clark, discusses, they see their variable context as an advantage. Quote, "I think the thing that makes podcasting an argument so great is the feeling of comfort. I feel like the person listening to my podcast could either be in their car, or on the way to work, or simply in the bathtub. This made me feel at ease. I felt like those things alone could help me connect to the people that I'm making the podcast for," end quote. As this student points out, the varying context helps them feel like they're connecting more to their audience, despite, or maybe even because, of the distractions. Students also seem to think more about other aspects of context, such as educational level and background of the listeners. Students especially seem to consider language choices based on their audience's context. Podcasts seem more personal to many listeners because the speaker is there in their ears and head, in a way the writer of print text is not. For this student and others, this personal nature of the podcast text seems to work in coordination with context to make the podcasting media an advantageous choice for them. The final area of writing I'm discussing here is tone. For many of my students, tone becomes a much more meaningful writing consideration and technique. While students writing typographic-based text need to consider how they'll express themselves for their audience to correctly interpret the text, these typographic text authors have only a limited scope of tone tools to utilize. They have word choice, flow, sentence density, language complexity, and other word-based areas to draw from. In some cases, they have visual choices that they may use to support a tone, such as typography, color, visual arrangement, and so on. With podcasting, the student's tone toolkit is expanded. They have the same word-based and visuals-based choices, but they now have auditory choices from sound levels, diction, vocal tone, to music and silences. With these expanded tools, tone becomes a bigger consideration and in many ways a more powerful technique for the writers. Since students use their own voice to set tone, this makes it more personal to them and literally connects tone with voice, both to their speaking voice and their voice as a writer within the text. As one student, Ian Chow, put it, quote, tone and style have become shockingly personal on the podcast level, end quote. While voice and tone have strong connections in any text, these connections become more obvious to many writers. While students see a variety of audiences for their print-based texts, many tend to get caught up in the academic tone they use for their teachers. These students know that their teachers are often their only real audience and the ones who will grade them, and we should not be surprised when they write for their teachers. With a podcast where students are literally speaking to their audience, they seem to be able to move away from the academic tone. As Ian Chow discusses this issue in his reflection on composing for a print-based argument and a podcast-based argument, quote, the main difference between the paper and the podcast was tone. For the paper, I used the academic argumentative tone, cool, collected, even-headed. There were no real embellishments or distinct sense of voice. I found it hard to fully detach myself from the academic voice when writing the paper argument, and so it comes across as dry and rather boring. The podcast, on the other hand, was more personal, more in-depth. I found it easier to cite examples and explain them better. The starkest difference was that I found that first person was pertinent to the podcast medium. Since you are physically talking into a microphone to a listening audience, I deem the tone should be more conversational, more personal, less academic, less dry, and injected a bit more personality into it, unquote. So, as with audience, purpose, and context, students seem to be able to consider and apply tone more thoroughly and deeply when composing a podcast text. As Cho and the quotation above points out, they appear to more easily move beyond the academic tone, audience, purpose, and context to something more appropriate, and the result is a stronger argument. As with the five canons, students consider and reconsider these four writing skills, audience, purpose, context, and tone, in deeper ways while podcasting. They often take them beyond what they apply in their typographic-based texts, and think about these concepts in new and exciting ways. New for them and exciting for the students, and also for us, their listeners and teachers. Like with the five canons, students take their deeper understandings and applications of these concepts to their other writing, print texts and digital texts alike, often becoming stronger writers because of their work with podcasts. Discussion and conclusion. Shanker, on page 375, argues that, quote, some of what has been achieved through reading and writing can be achieved in the oral and aural domains, unquote. This statement is only part of what may be achieved in the oral and aural domains. As I contend here, what may be achieved in the oral and aural domains cannot always easily be achieved through more traditional writing. But once achieved, students may, and often do, apply it to other forms of writing and become better writers in a variety of media. Obviously, as teachers of writing, improved writing is a key goal in our class. As I have discussed here, incorporating audio and video podcasts, especially student-produced podcasts, may improve student writing. However, another goal for many of our classes is to prepare students for life after their degrees. Podcasts may be helpful here too. Through working with podcasts, students may develop skills they need to be citizens of our digital world. As Lemke states on page 79, we need to teach, quote, informatic literacies, necessary skills of our future literacies, those we will all need, end quote. Not teaching our students these skills could lead to a world where, as Lemke also states on 79, quote, future citizens will be as disempowered as those who today cannot write, read, or use a library, end quote. Not only may integrating podcasting improve our students' informatic literacies, but podcasting skills may also lead to vital job skills. Many businesses and organizations now have podcasts, including 16% of Fortune 500 companies and 21% of other business groups, according to Nora Gaiman Barnes and Eric Mattson. In an earlier study by Barnes and Mattson, They found that 26% of the 200 largest charitable organizations in the United States are podcasting. They also found 79% are video blogging, a term that is not clearly defined in the study, but maybe video podcasts. These numbers appear to be increasing with time. Thus, there is an increasing need for people to have these skills for podcasting. Some of these companies and organizations have people whose sole job is to podcast. Who are these company-employed podcasters? What is their training? As teachers of computers and writing, we are perfectly situated to educate the next generation of podcasters. Our students who are trained in writing, rhetoric, argument, composition, audience, tone, and so on are ideal candidates for these positions, as long as we also teach them the skills to podcast. While I mostly focus on podcasting from an educational perspective, it is important to understand that teaching our students podcasting may better prepare them for career opportunities, such as being the podcaster for Fortune 500 Company X or Nonprofit Y. As Lemke contends on page 77, quote, the generic literacies of the information age will certainly include multimedia authoring skills, multimedia critical analysis, cyberspace exploration strategies, and cyberspace navigation skills, end quote. Podcasting is yet another digital media we should consider teaching in the computers and writing classroom. Not only is this an area our students may need to know to succeed in the business world, but by learning to audio and video podcast, students may improve their other writing skills in traditional print and other digital media areas. To podcast effectively, students must reconsider the rhetorical canons and other writing concepts in new, richer, and deeper ways. Since podcasting is often an oral and audible form, the five canons developed for speeches apply in both traditional and new ways, giving students a stronger grasp on what the canons mean and also how to apply them. Due to the personal nature of podcasts, students literally consider their voice and tone while still considering voice and tone in more traditionally written ways. The combination results in a more thorough understanding of these two concepts. By incorporating audio and video podcasts into the computers and writing classroom, we are better preparing our students for jobs working with podcasting and other digital media, and also providing them with a way to consider and reapply traditional writing concepts in deeper, more effective ways. Our students who podcast may become better writers of all types of text, from print to Web 3.0 and beyond. This concludes the podcast article. I do hope you check out the companion piece, also published in Kairos, where I discuss the digital divide and technological literacy concerns with podcasts, provide a more detailed discussion on podcast types, offer some possible podcast assignments, and provide a quick tip for teachers incorporating podcasting. The companion piece, Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering the Issues and Possibilities, is available at kairos.technorhetoric.net/16.2/praxis/Bowie. The full transcript of this article with full reference information and links is available at kairos.technorhetoric.net/16.2/topoi/Bowie. And also in the show notes. All student samples in this podcast were used with full permission. The music used in this podcast is Six off Ghosts 1 by Nine Inch Nails, which is available under an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike Creative Commons license. This text is licensed under a Creative Commons attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 3.0 United States license. Please give me, Jennifer L. Bowie, and Kairos credit, don't make money off of this, and share any derivative works.